The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it, we can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. It was nice to see everybody. Thank you for being here today. I'm going to talk a little bit about, well, just a little sentence from the offertory we had this morning. That beautiful one sung by Rev. Master Andos. Lovely. One little line. At this very moment, the rain of the Dharma pours into the lake of kindness. I just love that. So I'm going to talk about it a bit. Well, we talk about kindness a lot. Especially now, the way the world is at present, it needs all the kindness it can get. It seems to be, things get worse and worse. The best we can do sometimes is just practice kindness as best we can. The rain of the Dharma pours into the lake of kindness. And I thought, why? Why does the rain of the Dharma pour into the lake of kindness? What's the connection there? We take it for granted that Buddhism is a religion of compassion and tolerance, and that the Buddha himself was a deeply compassionate human being. It seems that even before his enlightenment, the Buddha was known for his kindness. He didn't want to hurt living things. There's a story about him, about his cousin Devadatta shooting a swan, and the Buddha rescues it and nurses it back to life. There's lots of stories in the Jataka tales about the Buddha as a bodhisattva before he came to his last life. A bodhisattva who was constantly giving his life for other beings, doing what was needed, not always dying, but often dying to help other beings, but not being a kind of self-sacrificing, I will sacrifice myself. Not being a self doing it, just doing what seemed best. That story of the starving tigress, which many of us know. There's a tigress out in the jungle with her cubs, and she's starving. She can't feed the cubs. And there's the Buddha as a bodhisattva in a previous existence thinking, well, if I give her my life, then she'll be able to live herself and feed her cubs. Seems like a reasonable trade, And so I think he throws himself off a cliff and dies, and the tiger eats him. This sounds a rather grim thing. We don't want to be doing this anytime soon. But it shows his kindness, and not just being a self, oh, I will be kind here. Who's going to see it except the tigress? But trying to do what's best, trying to consider what's really best to do here. When he was young, as we know, he was a prince, and his father tried to keep him away from all the grief of the world, all kinds of suffering. He didn't know about old age and sickness and death. And then finally, he finds out, and he's horrified, stricken with grief and sorrow, and thinks, oh my goodness, this is just awful. Surely there's some way. Isn't there something you can do about this? And he decides to, as we know, renounce the world and find out if there's something you can do about it. Something, some way of getting beyond this suffering of old age, sickness and death. He did it not just for himself, but for everybody. So everybody could find the end of suffering because of his deep compassion. He wanted to help all beings, not just himself. He could have just gone off and, enjoyed his enlightenment by himself, but he didn't. He spent the rest of his life after his enlightenment teaching people. Not always with great joy. A lot of people just derived huge benefit. Many people derived huge benefit from meeting the Buddha. And there were one or two, or a few, who were just kind of rude and resistant. But he wasn't beastly to them. I think the worst thing I found that the Buddha ever said to anybody, to any of the, visiting people, was a Brahmin who was really rude to him, beastly. And finally, at the end of it, the Buddha says, if somebody gives you a gift, and you don't want it. What do you do? And the Brahmin says, well, I ask them to take it home and, you know, share it with their family. So the Buddha says, I now give you back this gift of all you have said to me. Please take it home and share it with your family. That's about as mean as he gets, you know. He was actually tough on his monks. He could be quite, you know, austere with them. Sometimes he'd come in, all, you know, young monks all noisy, making a racket. The Buddha says, what's going on? What's that racket? And somebody says, oh, these are the monks from so-and-so. He says, tell them to go away. But then he lets them come back later. But they need to learn. That's not what you do. You don't come in and make a whole racket, especially in the Buddha's monastery when the people are trying to be quiet. So he can be tough. So why is it that compassion and kindness are so integral to the life and teaching of the Buddha? He realized his highest truth, and as I said, he shared it with everybody. He didn't just keep it to himself. Compassion is an integral part of wisdom. He had deep compassion. Because he had deep wisdom already before he became the Buddha, before he went and trained himself further, compassion is essential to wisdom. If you just look for wisdom, and we don't practice compassion and kindness, we're missing the whole point. Because we're just looking for something for ourselves. And that is not wisdom at all. Now I say compassion and kindness, not just compassion, not just kindness, because I don't think they're exactly the same thing. Thinking about it this morning, it seemed to me that if we just say compassion, it can seem to be more of a mental thing, a feeling of compassion. We feel compassion for somebody. We feel compassion for all the people who are suffering. And it's also a more universal thing. It's not partial. It's for everybody. Compassion is for everybody. Not, oh, I'll be compassionate towards this person, but not that one. You know, you don't do that with compassion. You give it to everybody. And that's the wonderful thing about it. Kindness seems a more of a personal thing. We practice kindness to a person or a thing or a being. To all the people we encounter in our daily lives, we can practice kindness. Compassion isn't exactly the same thing. Kindness is something you do, really. You can think kindly of somebody. We can offer merit and loving kindness. But practicing kindness is something we actually do in our daily life, with people we know and like, people we know and don't like, people we don't know at all, people in the grocery store, anybody, we can practice kindness to them. And that seems more like what kindness is, more of a human thing. You know, compassion is more of a big thing. But there's both. We need both. And the Buddha was a person of, as I said, of deep compassion and kindness. He nursed sick people. When one of the monks was ill and none of the monks wanted to take care of him because they were kind of revolted by his dreadful wounds and all that, the Buddha himself went and took care of him and then ranted at the monks for not doing so. He was quite tough with them, as I said. And this was his compassion. Didn't always look like kindness, but it was deep compassion because he wanted to help them train themselves to the best, to relinquish their hindrances. And you can't always do that gently. Sometimes you've got to be strict. So he was kind to people who needed kindness, and he was strict to people who needed strictness. He tried to do his best for everybody. He had compassion for everybody, and he would give them what they needed. He would answer their questions as was appropriate to their situation and their, you know, the way they were. He talked to lepers and kings and courtesans and farmers and monks and just about anybody, the rude Brahmins. You know, he talked to everybody. The Brahmins weren't always rude, but a few of them were. Some of them would become his disciples. He could see how beings suffer because of his wisdom. Even before he realized enlightenment, he could see suffering, and he felt it more deeply than maybe many of us might. And so he wanted to help them. In the best way, as I said, for them. And because of his wisdom, he could see this suffering with his heart of compassion and know what was best. If he hadn't been able to see suffering and feel compassion, he probably wouldn't have left home, because that's what spurred him to find the truth for himself, to find the end of suffering for himself, but also, largely, to find it for everybody, to help everybody, not just himself. He might not have had that aspiration for enlightenment if he hadn't had that deep compassion and sympathy for beings. As I said, you can't have wisdom without compassion. His compassion was essential to his wisdom. Old monks. I've had the fortune of meeting some old, deeply wise and revered monks in my time. And what you notice about them is not their wisdom. You notice their kindness. I've found all of them to be really modest, sweet, humble human beings with a heart of great kindness, never putting themselves on some kind of higher level because here's this little wormy person down here, but just kind, selfless, no me there being the wise person, just kind. So wisdom and kindness, wisdom and compassion, they're all essential to each other. With wisdom, we can see that we're not separate from other beings. We say this all the time. We're all part of Buddha nature. We're not a little separate me with my little miserable box by myself. We're all together in one world, one universe. We're all made of the same stuff. Not a separate self. This is the most, I think, the most fundamental aspect of the Buddha's teaching, that there is not a separate, real self. And this is about the hardest thing to understand, but everything else, I think, hinges on this. If we could understand that this little thought of being a me is not the reality, how much more could we practice kindness? The feeling of being a self, deluded. As the Buddha often said, regarding any thought, any feeling, any event, our own body and our own mind even, not me, not mine, not myself. He said it over and over again. Contemplate, this is not me, not mine, not myself. He said it to Rahula, his son. He said it to all sorts of other people. Not me, not mine, not myself. It seems so simple, and it's so hard to actually really grasp and believe, you know, and make one with ourselves. When we're not thinking and speaking and acting from the self, when we kind of get beyond that, we cannot help but be kind. It's right there. It's within us, actually. It's part of our nature. It's part of Buddha nature. It's this illusion of a self that causes us to be unkind, selfish, greedy, angry, fearful. It's all part of being a self. If we didn't have to worry about being a separate self, what would there be to fear? Why would we want something that somebody else didn't get? And we say this over and over again because it's so helpful. It's fundamental. When we're upset, to consider, where is there a self in all this turmoil? If this were happening to somebody else, would I be so upset? Probably not, you know. When we want something, even something as mundane as the last piece of cake, if we don't get it, would I be just as happy if somebody else had that piece of cake? Possibly not. There's a self there. And to just see it, to see that self at the bottom of it, in these little mundane ways, it's so helpful. And when we're upset, to see there's actually a little me at the bottom of all this is incredibly helpful. It helps us to relinquish the grip. To relinquish the grip on, I want this piece of cake or whatever it might be, or I'm really upset because this person's got in my face and not given me what I want and made me feel bad, and it's all about me, feeling bad, looking bad, being dismissed, you know, all this thousandfold scenarios we can come up with. It's all about me. It's so helpful when you can just take a second, sit still and consider. Is there a self at the bottom of this? Quite possibly there is. it is C. You know? Yep. If it was somebody else, I wouldn't be so upset. That is a clue. Not that we have to be unkind to ourselves, but just to see it with a little humor, maybe. Oh, yes, there's a me there. There's the self. Manjusri's beast once again. Right there, always looking up, always looking for trouble. The beast of self. It helps us to relinquish the grip on whatever it might be. Really helpful. And this itself is the practice of wisdom, to see the self at the bottom of these little mundane daily acts, daily situations, daily ups and downs. To see the self is actually to practice wisdom. It's exactly that. Easy to say, hard to do. When we're angry, it's so easy to justify ourselves. Well, there's this, they did this and they did that and the other thing. And to say, wait a minute, is this just a self getting out of control? Maybe. Would I be upset about it happening to someone else? Probably not. The practice of wisdom helps us to practice kindness, sympathy. The four wisdoms, charity, tenderness, benevolence, sympathy, they're all ways of relinquishing selfishness, all ways of practicing kindness and compassion to others, charity, giving to people, tenderness, speaking kindly to people, kindly about people, benevolence, wishing people well, sympathy, feeling for other beings. All of these are the practice of kindness and compassion, and they're wisdoms, they are wise, based on kindness. And kindness is based on wisdom. They both go together, just like this. The wisdom that sees the emptiness of a self. Back to the Buddha's life. He practiced selflessness to the end of his life. This is not self-abnegation and kind of a false humility. Oh, I'm nothing, I'm not really a Buddha, I don't really know anything. That wouldn't have done anybody any good. He said, yes, I've learned the truth. People would refer to him as the world-honored one. He didn't say, no, I'm not really world-honored. He just let them do it because there wasn't a self there. You know, if there's a self there, you're going to say, oh, no, don't do that. But if there's not a self there, okay, it's a skillful means. Yes, I've realized the truth. And you can learn it from me, and here we go. Rather than putting himself down or, you know, some kind of false humility or false pride. Here I am, I'm the Buddha now. You know, he doesn't do that. You can't imagine him doing that. Just doing what was good to do. What's best? What will help beings? Not self-conscious. Because there wasn't a self anymore. He just tried to do what was helpful. Sometimes he made a mistake, then he'd change it. He would make rules. Sometimes they'd upset people because they didn't work. So he'd change them. Mm-hmm. He didn't get stuck with, well, I know I'm right, I'm the Buddha after all. No, he made mistakes and he learned and changed things. He wasn't being a huge me. Teaching people to realize the truth for themselves, not to depend on him. He kept telling people, don't just depend on me, go do your training yourselves. He had people ordain other people. He didn't do everything himself. Towards the end of his life, they were saying, you know, who should we look to when you die? He said, look to the Dharma. Make the Dharma your refuge. Make yourself your own refuge. Not that you don't take refuge in each other, but don't be looking to somebody else to save you. I cannot save you. You have to save yourselves and help each other. The Sangha, work together, help each other. Really wonderful advice. Let the Dharma be your guide, not him. And when he was dying, he thought of Kunda, the blacksmith who'd given him his last meal that caused him to die, actually, because it was, you know, it had gone off. And when he ate this meal, he said, Kunda, bury this. Nobody but a Buddha could digest it. He didn't say, it's off, send it back. Who knows why? Maybe he figured his life was coming to an end out of politeness. He accepted this meal. Who knows? But he said, don't let Kunda feel bad because he gave me this meal that caused me to die. There's two kinds of really meritorious gift. One is a meal given to a Buddha right before his enlightenment. And the other is a meal given to the Buddha from which he dies. So Khanda has great merit. Make sure he knows this so he doesn't feel bad. You can imagine how you'd feel. He gives the Buddha a meal, he dies, you know, say, oh God. But he didn't want Khanda to feel this way. He wanted him to feel okay. But it's really, you know, just as he's dying himself, he's probably in horrible pain, and he thinks of Khanda. And one person comes to wants to be ordained right at the last minute, and Ananda says, oh wait, this isn't the time. And the Buddha says, no, let him come. Gives him his ordination at the very last minute, his last disciple, as he's on his deathbed, always thinking of other beings. His last words, I declare this to you, it is in the nature of all formations to dissolve, i.e. everybody has to die, giving him comfort. I can't stay around, I've got to die too, you know this. And also, attain perfection through diligence. Do your own training, train yourselves. Be diligent and realize the truth for yourselves. Don't depend on me. You've got the Dharma, I've given you everything I can, go for it. Giving comfort and telling them they have to train themselves. And not rely on him any longer because he's leaving. Great kindness and compassion, actually. All through his life you see these things. Just a real sane, kind, selfless human being. So what can we do? Practice kindness and wisdom. Kindness and compassion, I'm sorry. Kindness and compassion based on wisdom. The reign of the Dharma, the teaching of the Buddha, at this very moment, pours into the lake of kindness. Well, how is it doing that? It's us. It is we doing our training, practicing the Dharma. Every time we practice kindness, every time we let go even a little bit of our self-concern, every time we meditate, every time we try to sit still in a difficult situation, even these little moments, every time we just have to try to find the self at the bottom of our upset or whatever it might be, we're helping the rain of the Dharma to pour into the lake of kindness. Every time we do this, there's another little drop of the Dharma going into that lake of kindness. We could use an ocean of kindness at the moment in this world, but our training and our training, those little incremental drops, help to pour the rain of the Dharma into the lake of kindness. What about being a me, being kind? It's just, what's good to do here? Ah, sit still. Ah, relinquish my grip on anger or fear or desire or whatever it might be. Ah, what do I need to do? What's best? What's best for this person? What's best for the situation? Relinquishing our self-partiality just a little bit. Each time we do this, we're pouring the rain of the Dharma into the lake of kindness. So let's keep doing it. Thank you.